evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Lauren Meltzer. Our topic this hour is Proposition 37, labeling requirements for GMOs. This November, voters are being asked to decide if foods containing GMOs, genetically modified organisms, should require labeling at the grocery store. It's being called Proposition 37. Today, many of the foods we already eat come from GMOs, such as corn, canola, soy, and more. Those in favor of Proposition 37 believe consumers have the right to know how their food is being produced, while the opposition claim 37 will raise the cost of food, cause irrational fear, while slowing scientific progress. Joining me to weigh in on the pros and cons of the initiative are in studio Stacey Malkin. She's the media director of Yes on 37 California Right to Know campaign to label genetically engineered foods. She is a former journalist and newspaper publisher and longtime advocate for the environmental health campaigns, And most recently, she was the co-founder of the National Campaign for Safe Cosmetics and the author of the book, Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry. Welcome, Stacey.
Thanks so much for having me, Lauren.
Our pleasure. Also by phone, we have Ruth Waltenspiel. Beginning in 1957, Ruth and Ronald Waltenspiel grew, dried, and packaged and shipped organically grown dried fruits. And in 2003, the dried fruit business was sold and they now grow 200 acres of wine grapes. And Ruth is concerned that irrational fear of GMOs will inhibit progress to our already advanced food production system and raise costs to California consumers. Welcome, Ruth.
Nice to be with you.
Great to have you on. And we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. And we'll be answering phone calls and bringing people in about 20 minutes. But let me, before we start, I do want to just get a little bit of information on GMOs. I don't know that everyone, all the listeners, know exactly what they are and what they aren't. Stacey, can you tell us a little bit how, you know, modifying the genetic code of an organism in a lab using advanced splicing techniques differ than modifying the genetic code of an organism using selective breeding?
Sure. So genetically engineered foods, which have only been on the market for about 20 years in the United States, is when the DNA of a plant or animal is engineered with the DNA of another plant, animal, virus, or bacteria. So in crossing the genetic codes in ways that can't occur in nature. And so some examples are corn or soy, and those are two of the largest percentage crops that are genetically engineered to withstand pesticides, so crossed with a bacteria to be able to withstand huge doses of pesticides. That's by far the most common type of genetic engineering in the food system. Some foods have also been engineered to contain an insecticide within the food itself. And an example would be the sweet corn that's on shelves now in Walmart as of this summer, Monsanto's first sweet corn product. And that's actually been engineered to be both types. So it resists Roundup, so it's getting sprayed with large doses of Roundup, and it also contains an insecticide within it. So it looks like regular corn, it's not regular corn, and consumers don't know that because it's not labeled.
And what percentage of our food at this point is genetically modified?
Well, it's just a handful of crops. Corn, soy, sugar beets, canola are the primary crops in food. Those crops are used very widely in processed foods. So lots of like kids' corn cereal or corn chips or soy milk, processed foods on the shelves. Very few right now fresh foods, a little bit of papaya and squash. And then, as I mentioned, this new sweet corn product that's just on the shelves now. But there are many more that are in the pipeline for approval. For example, genetically engineered salmon, which has been engineered with an eel to grow twice as fast. I think that's a really good example to picture because if you go to the store and you choose salmon, you can tell if it's farm-raised or wild-caught or where it comes from in the country. We should also know if it's genetically engineered in a lab to actually be a different animal than has ever been in the food system before. People want to know that.
Are they considered the same thing? The genetically modified animals, food, versus plants?
Yeah, they would be considered the same in terms of right now, no safety testing or no labels required to get them approved in the United States.
Okay, and Ruth,
I'd like to mention a couple of good examples. For instance, cheese was made from the stomachs of calves, and through genetic engineering, it is now done synthetically. Anyone that's a animal lover would naturally think eating cheese that is genetically modified would be a plus over having to kill hundreds of thousands of calves in order to get this. Also, canola oil previously was called rapeseed, and it was used mostly in animal food, and it couldn't be properly digested by human beings because of the acids in it. Well, they went it in and they made genetic modifications which enabled the human body to use canola oil, and so here we have canola oil, which is a wholesome, good oil. So there's many, many, many examples of genetic engineering that is being used throughout our foods. And in fact, it has saved the papaya industry in Hawaii. We wouldn't have a papaya industry in Hawaii if it hadn't been for genetic engineering.
Can you tell us more about that?
I'm not a papaya grower. I have for about 46 years raised things like pears and peaches and prunes and that type of thing. But I'll tell you what little bit I know about the papaya. They had a ring fungus that was destroying the trees, and they went in and genetically engineered them to be resistant to that. And lo and behold, we now have papaya, which otherwise we wouldn't have had from the state of Hawaii.
Okay. And Ruth, can you tell us a little bit about, there's organic food, there's conventional.
Yes.
Genetically modified. Can you clarify the difference between those three?
Well, there's all kinds of growing. There's hydroponic growing. For instance, you know those beautiful bell peppers that we get in the markets, the reds and the orange and the gold bell peppers? Most of those are grown hydroponically. That's one growing method. Conventional is planting in the ground. Organic, and we were organic farmers until we sold our business in 2006 and sort of semi-retired. And it's a system of growing which they do not eliminate pesticides. They have a whole list of pesticides and that they use, but they try to produce foods with a minimum of pesticides and a minimum of inputs.
So are GMOs and organic, is it mutually exclusive to be one or the other?
I was on the organic board when that came before the board, and most of us were all in favor of GMOs. And then the USDA made a mistake. They said, okay, what are we going to do about irradiated foods and sewer sludge and GMO? And everybody was so shocked about the irradiated foods. And
irradiated foods are?
Those are foods that are almost all the spices coming into the United States are irradiated to get rid of pathogens and insects and other things that might harm people. But anyway, they didn't want those to be part of the organic system, and so they said, okay, for now, let's just leave it out. But there are a lot of growers, like myself, that really think GMOs should be and will, in the future, become part of the growing system because it's so much safer. You eliminate so many pesticides, so many passes over the field where, with no-till agriculture, you don't have to do so much plowing and repeat applications.
And I see I have Stacy here, and I know she is shaking her head. So Stacy, what you clearly disagree on that front.
Well, I wanted to say that Ruth is correct. There are some small, and these are a very tiny portion right now of the foods in the food system, like the papaya. But unfortunately, the vast majority of genetically engineered foods are causing massive increased pesticide use. This is well documented. In fact, new data just came out today from a PhD scientist in Oregon, Chuck Benbrook, showing that genetically engineered crops, and again, these are the Roundup Ready crops that make up the huge majority of corn and soy that are genetically engineered, are causing an increase in pesticides.
And the Ruth, can you hold on? Let's let Stacy have a finish her scent thought, and then we'll go to you.
And the reason is because the plants are no longer die from the pesticide use. Farmers are using more of the herbicides. They're also becoming less effective. So one of the consequences of genetic engineering, and this was predicted 20 years ago. Farmers said this would happen. Scientists said it would happen. Monsanto and the pesticide company said, no, it won't. They said, you know, the weeds are going to become resistant to the glyphosate and the Roundup. And that's exactly what happened. We're now seeing a scourge of super weeds, weeds as thick as baseball bats that are actually breaking farm equipment on millions of acres across the U.S. that are resistant to the glyphosate. So now they're proposing genetically engineered crops to go with 2,4-D and dicamba and some of the older, more toxic pesticides. So
you're concerned,
it's a pesticide treadmill.
Yeah, so your concern is that the pesticides just keep getting stronger and stronger.
And that's the way genetic engineering is actually being used in, if you look at the, as I said, huge majority of actually genetically engineered crops in the food system.
Okay, and Ruth?
Stacy is mixing up herbicide with pesticide.
Well, pesticide is an overarching, let me just clarify that. Pesticide is an overarching term that includes herbicides.
Okay,
but herbicides, Roundup, and glyphosate is an herbicide.
Okay.
Herbicides kill weeds. Pesticide kills pests, funguses, and that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
And so Roundup is a weed killer. It's an herbicide, not a pesticide.
And do the GMOs, in your opinion, Ruth, are the GMOs dealing with herbicides or pesticides or both?
Both. It's ubiquitous through the agricultural system. Let me explain why you would use something like Roundup. Okay. You plant your crop of soybeans. You go in and you harvest the soybeans. Well, they used to have to go in and till that soil and lay it by going over and over and over the field and to plant it to corn. And the reason the corn follows the soybeans is soybeans produces a natural nitrogen that the corn needs and takes up. So when the soybeans are gone and the temperature in the spring warms up to the right temperature, they go in and they drill in the genetically modified corn. Up comes the corn, but whoops, here come the weeds too. And the weeds would smother out the corn. So they go in and they spray with an herbicide, which has been Roundup for the past 20 years.
But now is becoming ineffective.
Well, it hasn't in our area. I understand that they have found some weeds that it's not working on, but they're working on the next generation. And, you know, this is, as Stacy said, fully anticipated. It's just like penicillin used to be the only antibiotic we needed. Well, now we need a wide variety of antibiotics, and it's always part of evolving science.
Evolving to more toxic pesticides.
But let me actually loop back and let's go and just talk about specifically Proposition 37 for a second. And Stacy, I'd like you to tell us in a nutshell what Proposition 37 does.
Proposition 37 is, first of all, a true people's movement for our right to know what's in our food. Many of the environmental and health groups in the United States have been fighting for over a decade to get labeling of genetically engineered foods. We haven't been able to do it because of the massive opposition from Monsanto, the chemical companies, which are now pouring tens of millions of dollars into California to try to confuse voters. But Prop 37 is a simple labeling law. It requires foods containing genetically engineered ingredients to be labeled, which is the law currently in 50 other countries. But as I said, we haven't been able to get it here. So what's happened in California is a massive grassroots movement. Almost a million people signed petitions to get it on the ballot. We have over 2,000 endorsing organizations, including the largest labor, political, environmental health groups in the state, all saying, yes, on 37, we have a right to know what's in our food, and we want to know if it's genetically engineered.
And so what will these labels look like? I mean, how specific will they be?
So the initiative requires labels to carry the words partially produced with genetic engineering, or maybe partially produced with genetic engineering. And that would appear somewhere on the front or back of the package. So, you know, presumably same size type as ingredient lists, same general location. So it's just added information, just like consumers can find out about calories, nutrition, potential allergens. They would also be able to make a choice about genetic engineering.
And so with something like the papaya, or the corn you mentioned, where would it be labeled there?
So that would be on the bin. It would be just a notice saying genetically engineered. You know, just like the salmon says farm-raised or wild-caught, and you can find out where your produce comes from. It would just have a notice that said genetically engineered right on the bin.
And does the product have to be detectably different for it to be labeled?
Well, it has to be, if it contains genetically engineered ingredients, it has to be labeled. And, you know, as we said before, there are just the handful of crops right now that are genetically engineered. So, of course, it would only apply to those crops. It would absolutely not. This is a huge misinformation that's being put out there by the multi-million dollar ad campaign. It would not raise costs for consumers. Companies are changing their labels all the time. This is what they do. The law gives them 18 months to change their labels. As I said, they're already labeling in 50 other countries for GMOs. So this is very simple, straightforward, and business friendly.
So is the wording loaded? Does labeling seem to assume that GMOs are bad?
Well, you know, we don't only label for things that are assumed bad. I mean, you could find out if something's fresh or frozen. You know, we find out about allergy information in case you care about that. It's just information that's available to most consumers in the industrialized world, but has not been available to American consumers, even though, and this is the why I think we're seeing such an impassioned people's movement around this, even though 90% of Americans in poll after poll after poll say they want to know if their food's genetically engineered. 90%. I mean, we're the ones buying and eating this food. This is a democracy. We get to know what's in our food.
So, Ruth, do you feel the same way? Do you think that
to take and boogie boo a good science and make something wrong with it on those beautiful
I'm curious, what do you mean it makes something bad of it? Do you think the wording is loaded by saying
Here's what happens. If I took those beautiful bell peppers,
which are not genetically engineered, so let's be clear about that. We have to be just honest in what we're saying.
Is it my turn now, Stacey?
Yeah, Ruth, go ahead.
If you took those beautiful red and orange and gold bell peppers and put on there grown hydroponically, people don't know what that means, and they go, oh, my God, maybe that's the way they grow marijuana, maybe. Oh, I don't want that. Instead of saying, this is the science that's going to move us forward. Let's be honest about it. At the turn of the century, our life expectancy was 40, 45 years of age, 45 years. Now, in the year 2012, about 112 years later, our life expectancy is 76 or above. This means that science, through cleaner water, vaccinations, better medicine, and my industry, farming, the science of better farming now enables a farmer to feed hundreds of families, where in 1900 he could only feed his own family and possibly one or two more. This was through science, and we need to encourage, explain, and tell our story to the public.
Okay, Ruth, I'm going to stop you right here.
Other people on the face of the earth has ever eaten. We have more choices and better food.
Okay, Ruth, I'm going to stop you. I'm going to stop both of you right here. Just want to let people know that this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. And tonight we're discussing Proposition 37, the labeling requirements for GMO foods. My guests are Stacey Malkin, the media director of the Yes on 37 California Right to Know. And she's clearly yes and for Proposition 37. And Ruth Waltenspiel, a grower of wine grapes and a former organic farmer, and she is against Proposition 37. We'd like to hear from you. If you have any questions, if you have any concerns, you know, how do you feel about this, about Proposition 37? How do you feel? Do you feel like you're desperately needing to get more information about the kind, you know, the way foods are being produced? Or do you think that, you know, it just is confusing? We want to know from you. Again, the number to call and join our conversation is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com.
The subject that worries me the most is the shakedown lawsuits.
Okay, can you tell us why?
Well, my husband and I were in business for 46 years, and when we sold the business, we had about 200 employees. I'm now down to 18 employees. But during that period of time, never once did I sue anybody, and never did anybody sue me. This enables anyone to sue, any lawyer to sue the grower, the processor.
Well, what would they be suing them for? Ruth, what would they be suing them for?
They come in and they say, your product has genetically modified foods in it, and you don't have it labeled properly. It's the same thing as the handicapped that they had to finally just pass a law because they were going out and slapping lawsuits on people without even giving them a chance to go out and find out what they'd done wrong.
Well, let me take your point, Ruth, and actually throw it to Stacey, because I am kind of curious. I mean, how do you verify if a food has GMOs in it?
Well, the producers tell you if they do. What I would like to ask Ruth about this is if you accurately labeled your food all that time that you were selling food, and my guess would be that your answer is yes, and if you weren't, I could have sued you already. I can sue a company right now if they're lying on their label about calories or things like that. So this noise about shakedown lawsuits, I mean, it's the talking points of the No on 37 campaign, which is funded by Monsanto and DuPont.
Listen, family farmers, grocers, everybody is against this thing because it throws it immediately into the court system, and you go, oh my God, I can't defend this all the way through.
Well, so Ruth, we have 2,000 farmers that are supporting Prop 37. We have some of the largest grocery chains in the state, Whole Foods. We've got many, many supporters, and they're saying this is a straightforward, simple law. It doesn't invite lawsuits. Independent analysts have said that. They've looked at the law and said this is very easy for businesses to follow. It gives them 18 months. It's very clear. It's very specific.
Wait, you know, okay, I'm going to actually, I want to actually stop this conversation about law and go back a little bit to the exceptions, because there's not everything that would be labeled according to this proposition. So, for example,
all the dairy foods are left out.
Yeah, so and why is that? Why is that? So, dairy?
Restaurant foods are left out. All of the alcoholic beverages have been left out. Very narrow group of foods, and nobody seems to understand why they left dairy products out.
Okay, well, let's ask Stacey. Stacey, tell us why isn't it across the board?
So the initiative does include exemptions. They're very simple and straightforward and common sense. So restaurant and alcohol are not included, but those foods are labeled under different rules and they don't have ingredient lists. So it didn't make sense to include this. Dairy would be included. Meat, eggs, cheese are included if they come from genetically engineered animals.
Even what about the grain they're eating?
So it does exempt the cows that eat genetically engineered food, and that's a common part of laws all around the world.
Does that concern you?
We didn't think that we should in California leapfrog over what other countries have done, because we've been trying for 20 years to just catch up with what other countries have done. So while I may not have written it that way, but it very clearly does include the foods that people are eating most that is genetically engineered, and the foods that they're eating directly, and that's all the foods on supermarket shelves.
And what about restaurants? How does that work?
Well, you know, restaurants, bake sales, things like that are not included because, again, you don't get an ingredient list with your food. So it's a whole nother sort of way of labeling. And you know, also tracking what cows are eating is a whole nother layer of questions, of difficulty. You know, how do you track what a cow eats? It's just a different system.
So it's a first level.
So this law is going with, like, let's label foods that are labeled under, you know, laws that require ingredient lists in food that is the by far largest source of genetically engineered food that people are actually eating.
So kind of piggyback on those labels.
Cheese is included.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. Tonight we're discussing Proposition 37, which is labeling requirements for GMO foods. My guests are Stacey Malkin, Media Director of the Yes on 37, California Right to Know, and Ruth Walton-Spiel, grower of wine grapes and former organic farmer. And we invite you to call in with your questions or comments. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's again 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Got a lot of callers. I want to go to our first caller of the evening, Elizabeth from Oakland. Good evening, Elizabeth.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for some wonderful women doing this great debate. I appreciate you both. I'm just going to be forthright. My tendency is more towards Stacey's argument, but Ruth, I want to tell you I have big empathy for farmers and what people go through and the impact on farmers these days with new regulations. I feel like, for me, I'm concerned about certain crops like corn and soy, some of the larger crops, and I want to know why not just, you know, list this, as Stacey said, as another source of information, and then do your larger information campaign around what people know about further. You know, with empathy to farmers, why not consider this information? And I guess my third point is we're a small slice of people who are going to be concerned about this, just like the earliest organic consumers, you know, people. So what would your solution be to inform people more largely, but given that it's going to be a small slice of the pie of people who are going to maybe not buy something?
Thank you for your really, really excellent question. There are only 2% of our population are farmers, and these farmers have limited way to get our message out. And I thoroughly agree with you. We've dropped the ball. Somehow we should have gotten out to everyone, and it is in the science and in the universities, and they're even doing genetic engineering in our high school biology classes. And it is a safe, good science, but we've just sat back here and not told our story because it's very, very difficult for a farmer to get an audience to get out there and let people know. There are coming up now about 7 billion people on the face of this earth, and it's the green revolution, the fertilizers and the pesticides that are now feeding us. There are many wonderful exceptions like organic foods, but that's what's feeding the world, and we better move on with our science, keep our eyes and ears open, and take advantage of the wonderful things that it can do. For instance, genetically engineered rice can increase the vitamin A to the point that massive amounts of blindnesses in third world countries can be eliminated. The peanut allergy, they are now working on removing those allergen-producing genes so that everybody will safely be able to eat peanuts.
Okay, wait, I want to actually let Stacy chime in. So I have a feeling you wouldn't agree totally with Ruth, or maybe you would.
Well, I do agree actually with the very important thing that she's saying, which is that being transparent and open with the public about what's been going on with genetic engineering, I think, is a responsibility and is something that's been missed. Also, the golden rice example that she mentioned is important because, unfortunately, it was a massive failure. They spent many, I don't know how many hundreds of millions trying to develop this rice with increased vitamin A, but haven't yet been able to bring it to market. But here's a good example that does get at the heart of what Ruth is saying. If we did have a product like this rice with vitamin A that had a consumer benefit, of course it would be labeled, because how else would anybody know that it had a consumer benefit and was better than regular rice? The problem is we don't have any consumer benefits with the genetically engineered foods on the market right now. They've been engineered as part of a pesticide scheme, as part of using large amounts of pesticides or producing herbicides. I think it's the same thing, herbicides, pesticides, same term. But they've been engineered either to withstand or produce these pesticides and insecticides.
So do you think, Stacy, that, but do you feel that it's really a regulatory thing as opposed to a labeling thing to a degree? I mean, in terms of the kind of genetic modifications that are taking place in the processes?
Well, certainly there's a regulatory responsibility. I mean, our policy on GMOs goes back 20 years. It was introduced by Dan Quayle, who was vice president at the time. It was written by a Monsanto lawyer, and the U.S. FDA policy says genetically engineered foods are the same as regular foods.
That's
been discredited by world scientific consensus, the World Health Organization, the United Nations, the European Union, even the American Medical Association are all saying that mandatory safety studies need to be required for genetically engineered foods because they're different from regular foods and they do have unintended consequences. We know that in the science. Many, many animal studies showing links to allergies and other health impacts. And just last week, a huge new study that's getting lots of attention showed that genetically engineered corn, it was the very first long-term study conducted on GMO corn. It was peer-reviewed in a well-respected journal. They found very serious health effects in the rats that ate a GMO diet for their lifetimes.
And let me, you know why the
Ruth, I'm going to quick comment from
that
you, and then I want to go to other people.
That was the most bogus study in the whole world. Those rats had been developed. So
Ruth, the industry uses the same rats
tumors
for all their safety studies. That is a false position.
Okay, so Ruth, I guess we can't solve that right here, but let me, we have several callers, so let me go to Caitlin from Berkeley. Good evening, Caitlin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure, thanks for calling in.
So, yeah, I've just been following the yes and no on Prop 37, and I just wanted to make a comment that what I've noticed is that from the no on 37 side, it seems like they have all these reasons why they don't want labeling. And as a consumer, it feels a little insulting. It feels like I'm not smart enough to make an informed choice about what I'm eating. And I think, you know, I'm in the health field and there are so many things that it's important to know about. And education is so important. And if genetic engineering is a good thing, and it's obviously a powerful technology that could probably do a lot of good and could maybe also do bad, you know, like many powerful technologies. But I want to know what I'm eating, and it just seems so simple.
But this simple little law, the way it's written, will make your food cost more, because I can tell you, as a farmer, farmers don't say, oh boy, let's get up and spray today. It is, you try to produce the cleanest, most wholesome food you can. And if it weren't for genetic engineering, your corn, your soy, all of these products that we've been discussing would be much, much more expensive. And
what would raise the cost? Why would that, what specifically would make the cost go up?
You would be burning diesel. You would be going over that field time after time after time, eradicating those weeds.
So it's not about the whole labeling? Ruth, is it not about the cost increase would not be about the relabeling? Or is that what you're saying?
Well, it adds to the whole thing. If you scare the public off of genetic engineering without them going in and looking at it and staring and studying it and realizing the benefits, then you are definitely going to increase the cost of foods.
Okay,
and
let me go to another
label doesn't make any difference. Let's pretend that you're a food distributor in the Reno, Tahoe area. This means that in your warehouse, you're going to have a label for California and then a label for Nevada. It's ridiculous. The Federal Food and Drug and 400 scientific peer-reviewed studies
that use the same rats
have looked into genetic engineering and have found it to be the same equivalent.
Well, then why not educate the public?
I agree, but as one single farmer, I have no way to do that. I think that it's very, very important, but I don't know. You know, we look to our universities, and they are all teaching it, using it. I mean,
okay. Let me. I want to, Ruth. I want to actually go now to James from San Jose. Ruth.
Genetically engineered.
Ruth.
Yes.
I'm going to go to James from San Jose because he has another interesting angle. So, James, welcome to City Visions.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I guess I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
First of all, my question is, what does this bill define as genetic engineering? I'm a biology student, and the term, I mean, scientifically, it can be a little loose because we have hybrids that we can engineer through, I mean, just really natural causes. I mean, that's how we have certain colored plants and everything nowadays. So, like, what exactly do they define as genetic engineering? Are we talking about mixing DNA from like E. coli or other cells like that that will to bring out that? And then I guess my other question is too, why does the government have to, as a biology student, there's nothing I've ever seen to be a negative effect of genetic engineering, at least on the mass scale. So I guess I'm kind of curious as to why it needs to be on the label. I'm not disagreeing with, I don't think it necessarily costs more. I have a family friend who is in the farm industry and stuff like that, and to be honest, not to disagree with Ruth or anything like that, but it just doesn't seem like cost would be the problem. I'm just not sure why the government needs to enforce this.
Okay, well, why don't we hear from, thank you for calling in, those are great questions. Stacy, why don't we start with you first?
So the initiative defines genetic engineering, anything that has its DNA artificially altered by genes from other plants, animals, viruses, or bacteria. So it's the official definition of genetic engineering that the World Health Organizations and other regulatory agencies are using. So, and as to why, I mean, there are lots of reasons why people want to know about genetically engineered foods. There are concerns being raised in the science about health impacts, links to allergies, and there are also environmental concerns, including, as we talked about, the pesticide increases, biodiversity loss. You know, farmers that we work with, and again, we do have 2,000 farmers that are behind the Yes on 37 campaign. They're worried about the purity of their seeds. They're also worried about contamination of their fields from GMO crops, and that is happening. Farmers are having huge problems with pollen drift and the genes getting into their crops that weren't supposed to be there.
All crops.
And Ruth?
Yes. All crops are in a process of genetically moving forward. If we never did anything with this science, everything produces pollen. Lots of, you never plant squash near cucumbers because they will cross and produce a new plant. Sometimes it produces the most wonderful new discovery in the world. Most of the time it does not produce something that is edible and desirable. If you walk through the woods, genetic engineering is going on every day. Everything is mixing and crossing. It's called evolution. Everything evolves and moves forward.
So Ruth, do you see the evolution that takes place in a lab to be the same as the evolution that takes place in the field?
It makes it more precise. Genetic engineering is like having a dictionary to go to, and you can identify this gene does this. Now, she keeps using the word pesticides in corn. All they did is removed one gene, and that gene made corn undesirable. They didn't like the corn borer didn't like to eat the corn. So the corn borer went somewhere else, and removing that one gene eliminated the use of thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds and tons of pesticides because the corn borer no longer attacked the corn.
Is that in your understanding, Stacey? Or
no, actually, the Monsanto sweet corn was engineered to contain three BT viruses, genes, as well as to be a Roundup Ready genetically engineered crop. And by the way, I've looked at Monsanto's website to look at their safety studies, and they don't have peer-reviewed data on that. So, you know, here's this corn in Walmart with three BT genes in it, which does act as an insecticide and also Roundup Ready. So, you know, again, genetic engineering is different, and it's a gene gun being used to shoot genes into a plant, and it's known, the National Academy of Sciences has reported on this, that unintended consequences can occur. New proteins, possible allergens, possible toxicity. That's why some of the animal studies are showing these weird effects on liver and kidney toxicity and like that. So there are concerns, and we need more study. I mean, that's the bottom line, is this needs to be rigorously studied by independent scientists, and that hasn't happened.
Well, if you're just tuning in, wait, Ruth, hold on.
Peer-reviewed studies come from. It has been studied. And you just can't genetically engineer something and put it on the market. It's
yes,
like
you can. Look at the regulations.
The Federal Food and Drug reviews all of the data.
They do
all right. Not. Ruth and Stacey, just hold on for a second because I have to, reintroduce the show for those who've just turned in. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. And we're discussing a very animated conversation about Proposition 37, which is the labeling requirements for GMO food. My guests are Stacey Malkin, who's the media director of the Yes on 37 California Right to Know, and Ruth Waltenspiel, who's a grower of wine grapes and a former organic farmer. And we invite you to call in with your questions and comments. The number to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. And I have to say, we've had some great questions so far. Let me go to Patrick from Emeryville for our next question.
Yes, this is Patrick, and I am strongly in favor of just label it.
Okay, Patrick. Maybe we can call you. You can call back because it's a little too hard to hear you with your phone connection. So let me go to our next caller. We have a Bill from Mill Valley. Millie from Mill Valley.
Hello, I'm in Berkeley. Millie in Berkeley.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Hi, Millie. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. I have a comment to make about Monsanto.
Okay.
Which takes great pride in its Roundup Ready spray. I don't know whether that creates the genetic modification or not, but according to something that I learned some years ago from the Ecology Center in Berkeley, Roundup Ready has with it an ingredient that is very toxic, that is used to stick Roundup to its plant. Now, that may no longer be the case, but it's an ingredient meant to glue Roundup to its plant. And if that's still going, then it's a dangerous pesticide.
Dangerous pesticide.
It's dangerous for farmers, for gardeners and so forth.
Yeah, it's thank you, Millie. I guess I want to go back and throw out to the guests. You know, it seems like these fall into different categories. I mean, there's these the genetic modification, which is really adding dangerous things to the plants and crops, and then there seems to be ones where it's a little less clear, you are changing and maybe, adding a protein or diluting a protein might make a difference, but it seems like there's a little more controversy in terms of the science. But is there a way, Stacey, to label, can the labeling go a step farther and indicate what kind of genetic modification has taken place?
Well, I think the first step is just making consumers aware and giving people a choice, and then the industry does need to, as Ruth has been saying, do a better job about being transparent and educating consumers. And, you know, the very first genetically engineered product to come to the market, which was a tomato called the Flavor Saver, the company did decide they didn't have to do this because the government didn't require it, but they decided it would be labeled. It had a sticker on it. It actually had a brochure at the point of purchase with an 800 number so people could call for more information. They did many safety studies. They made all that transparent because they felt that consumers would want to know and had a right to know. And so the industry really started out being transparent. And then what happened is Monsanto bought that company. It was called Calgene, and became by far the largest purveyor of genetically engineered foods. And it all sort of went underground, became secret, was hidden from consumers. No safety studies. And because of the patent agreements, they actually get to decide who does the research and what gets published. So there are a lot of questions, and it hasn't inspired consumer confidence. But I think the first step is to, like 50 other countries have already did, let's just label it and give consumers the right to know and decide for ourselves.
Okay, let me go to another caller. We have Wayne from Richmond. Good evening, Wayne.
Oh, hi. What a lively discussion. So I've got a couple of points, and I'll just go really quick with them.
Okay.
First of all, Prop 37 is a right to know proposition, and I'm kind of offended by the idea that Monsanto or Archer Daniels Midland or Cargill would want to interfere with my right to know what's in the food I eat. But the other question I had is, in terms of American-grown products that are exported overseas to one of these 50 countries that already has GMO laws on the books, I imagine these are all pretty developed, pretty highly educated countries. Are those products that are exported from this country that contain GMO products not already labeled to be sold into those markets that have right-to-know laws on the books? And if that's the case, I don't imagine it's affected the cost of those products that are being sold overseas.
Yeah, that's a good question, Wayne.
Most of the corn and soy and products we're talking about have been sold to Europe, all over the world, but they've been sold mostly as animal feed. And when it is sold as animal feed, it does not require any labeling. Now, the papaya and canola oil and those things have been readily accepted by the consumer, because would you care if I put on your label grown through hybridization? It's just another plant breeding technique. Or grown hydroponically, would that make any difference to you?
So you bring up a good point, Ruth, and I guess I would ask Stacey, I mean, I know we kind of talked about just getting the label first, but I mean, would, you know, that differentiation, do you see that happening as a next step, or?
Well, I think there needs to be many next steps, mandatory safety studies, so that we get to the bottom of what's going on with the allergies and other health problems they see showing up in rats fed GMO corn. But that's all not what this is about. This is about...
Wait, Ruth, please listen.
Prop 37 is just about labeling. And, you know, other countries, as the caller mentioned, they do require labeling. And so any foods getting exported from the U.S. that go to these other countries, they have to be labeled.
And they won't
accept
them,
consumer products. There's a lot of consumer demand saying we don't want GMOs because of concerns about what we're seeing in the science. But the really important thing that the caller also raised that I just want to reiterate is that costs didn't go up in Europe when they implemented labeling. They haven't gone up in other countries. They're not going to go up here. It's a simple label. It doesn't cost anything for companies to give us information.
Okay. Ruth, did you want to add something?
Yes. It's going to force people to go through and change all of their labels, put another slot in their warehouse, particularly if they're distributing across state borders. And if we're going to have labeling laws, let's do it nationwide. Let's not have one law out here for California that burdens just the food producers and the people here. Let's do it nationwide. It would force farmers and food companies to implement just very costly new label packaging, both at the distribution level, record-keeping operations, and, you know, it's just, they estimate that it will cost each family about $400 more a year, and that was good research.
That was research that came from a political consulting firm that's best known for opposing recycling laws. I'm serious. Yeah. I mean, we have to look at who's behind what we're hearing. And the fact is, these companies don't want to tell us what's in our food.
Okay. Let me go to Sunny. We have Sunny from Oakland.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for this program as well. I have a comment and a question. If GMO foods are as beneficial as one of your speakers says they are, then I don't see why it can't be helpful for us to be better educated about these things. It seems kind of like a bigger issue about keeping the public in the dark about this stuff. I feel like the more we know, the better educated we are, the better choices that we can make. And if they are really beneficial, then why not label them? And I agree. I think that labeling should be nationwide, but it has to start somewhere, and California is a great place to start.
Yeah, California always seems to be the first when it comes to these environmental issues, huh?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. And then it also makes me think of kind of who's in charge, speaking about who is behind a lot of this stuff. Are we going to let a corporation be in charge of the information that we can get, or are we really a democracy? Do we really get to make our own decisions?
Okay.
But we have to make...
Sunny, thank you. Those are good questions and good comments. Ruth, did you want to add to that?
We have to make these decisions based on good science. And good science has said, this is a wonderful new addition to our foods. If I went today and, we'll say cucumbers, and said, these cucumbers are produced by hybridization, it would worry people. They would say, well, I better take this other cucumber over here. It makes doubts in people's minds when they should be totally encouraged and interested in expanding and improving our scientific production.
Well, it sounds, Ruth, it really sounds to me like your concern is kind of along lines of what Sunny was saying. It's just that people don't understand what the label means, and they might interpret it in a negative way when it's not across the board negative. But let me go. We have four more callers on the line. I want to try to get to everyone. So Marie Louise from Palo Alto, welcome to City Visions.
Thank you so much. Very interesting program, and I thank you for it. And I do feel a number of times rather insulted by what Ruth says, as if, you know, hydroponically grown vegetables or whatever, that's just going to be as dangerous as genetically engineered. Well, these are entirely different things.
Absolutely.
And I feel that we do need to be letting people know. And even Ruth said everything moves forward. Well, then maybe we can move forward with the labels also, to have it labeled how it is genetically engineered. And unfortunately, however, everything that moves forward has not proven to be safe. You can speak to some of the farmers in India, and they know how their lives have been affected, where I believe we have something like over 300 Indian farmers per day who commit suicide. Mm-hmm. Because they have had these genetically engineered seeds. Well, that's something to think about, I think. I mean, I can see somebody might want to protect their winery or any kind of farm they have.
Well, the farmers you bring up, I mean, the whole issue of the farmers and what it's been doing to the farmers is it could be a whole other show, quite frankly. But let me, you know, you bring up a lot of great points. Everyone's been fantastic. Let me go on. I want to let all the callers have a say. So we have Kat from Oakland.
Hi. Thank you, Kat, for taking my call. This previous caller actually brought up the first point I wanted to make, which was that I heard a program the other day talking specifically about 250,000 dead farmers in India in the past decade, due to the starvation they've suffered and deprivation because of Monsanto. And the most morbid detail I heard was that they've often killed themselves using their own pesticide. It was so shocking I couldn't forget it, to be honest. And the second one that I know about Monsanto personally is the fact that very recently there was a coup in Paraguay where they removed a president who was standing up for the small farmers, who were standing up against Monsanto, and their parliament removed him, obviously replacing someone much more friendly. I had a question for Ruth very quickly. It seems like you're a lobbyist in your style and your extremely assertive opinion. I'd like to know what your other professional associations are, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure. I married my husband in 1957, and we started farming here in Sonoma County. And we grew crops like apples and prunes and pears, and we dried them. And as the organic market grew, we added other crops. And I guess our biggest success was the sun-dried tomato. And I went to the fancy food show in New York City in 1980.
You know what, Ruth, we're kind of at the top of the hour. Is there any other, so you were a wonderful farmer.
I have no association with anybody except I called up my local farm bureau and I said, I think that we ought to encourage this science and we ought to vote no.
You don't work for a big agribusiness?
No. My husband and I are semi-retired. We went from a rather large orchard operation to growing wine grapes. And, you know, I do belong to my local farm bureau, but other than that, I don't think I have any other association.
All right. Well, let me then go to George from San Francisco. Good evening, George.
You know, I don't want to say anything about the merits of genetically engineered food or the demerits of genetically engineered food. I just think the point is whether it's good for you. The point might be whether we all want to blindly engage ourselves in a science experiment. And whether we do or not, all we're talking about with this proposition is putting a bug on the product, like the one that says organically grown, or the one that says union printed, or whatever the bug happens to be, and that way people will be able to shop intelligently. That's it. And Ruth, you know, you're really good, but got to tell you, you are a bit of a motor mouth, and if you weren't such a motor mouth, people would not think that you're working for Monsanto. So next campaign, think that over, would you?
All right. Well, you know, we're told at the top of the hour, so let me just go to Keith from San Francisco, and I'm sorry, if anyone else is thinking about calling in, we'll have to wait till our next show on this. Keith.
Hi. My comment is, I think it's just as much about monoculture as it is about genetic engineering. I mean, genetic engineering is sort of like mutations on steroids, you know, and in history, you know, humans have sort of selected out the best product over much greater amounts of time, and now it's incredibly accelerated, and the monoculture just makes it incredibly that much more accelerated. So I think there's a real need to really more directly address it, just like we address products made with petroleum, which is also a natural product.
Keith, thank you for that last line, and on that note, I actually am going to say that is City Visions for this evening. So I want to thank my guests, Stacey Malkin, the media director of the Yes on 37, California Right to Know, and Ruth Walton Spiel, a grower of wine grapes and former organic farmer. I want to thank you so much for coming in. What a dynamic show. For a link to this and other City Vision shows and to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, you can go to our KALW.org site and go to Programs and then select City Visions. Our engineer this evening was Eric Wayne. Thank you so much, Eric. And tonight's show was produced by Matt Fidler. Great job, Matt. City Vision's senior producer is Susie Britton. Next week, we will not be on the air because it is Columbus Day, but join us the following week for another mind-blowing show of City Visions. This is Lauren Meltzer. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.